Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to begin by talking with Frontlines of Freedom's only junior co-host, Cedar Coriel, and then General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. So welcome back to duty, Cedar. You've helped us on this show a number of times over the years, but not in the last year or so. You're a young man who's paying attention to what's going on in our nation. So please share with us some of what the key issues are in our nation from your perspective, because it's your nation.
Yeah. You know, hey, Denny, I'm really glad to be back. It's been too long. You know, it's funny you should ask that. A few years ago, I was in a speech and debate class, and they said, Peter, you know, you're 12. Tell us about some problems in America and how to fix it. And I couldn't come up with anything. And now I can come up with a lot of things. Our country is really struggling. And I think everyone knows that. But the first thing that has to come to mind, just looking on the news on Fox a few couple days ago, the colleges, I've barely ever heard of anything like this. It really blows me away, Denny. The idea that we can hate a country so much that college students will just come and almost rot for just days on end and camp out and break all the rules and cops can come and arrest them. I think that is the kind of thing that's going to make it into the history books, Denny. I really do. It's so out of this world.
I agree with you. You're certainly describing what I think too. So that is a bizarre situation, but it's part of a bigger picture. But it's unfortunately, it's a dominant part, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, the bigger picture, that's so deep. You know, the bigger picture you're mentioning, like these kids are my age, right? I mean, I just turned 18. They're between 18 and 22, college age, right? This age, everyone, you know, it's going to be so hard to turn 18. I did not really believe them. I mean... just turned 18. On the day I turned 18, we went and I got my permit, you know, and I'm late into that. And now I've got to figure out how to get a job. You know, I want to be married within at least 4 years. We've got to figure all this out. And these kids, when you walk into a college campus, you're there to learn. It's a new experience, right? And they come in and they're taught all these terrible things. You know, that's one of the most disappointing things for me, just coming out of being a kid, right? What they've done to the education system is depressing. It's full on depressing. I've been homeschooled since elementary. They pulled me out of elementary. I'm not sure I even quite made it into first grade. I came back home swearing and mom and dad like, nope. So they pulled me back out and the swearing went away. Something's just wrong. And these kids are feeling it. And I'm just going to admit it. If you grow up with that, you're going to be broken. You're going to be broken. And you see it in what they're doing now. I mean, they're still human. They're still feeling the same things that really I'm feeling. They're totally messed up and they can't see the humanity of the people in Israel, right? It's a war over there and we just can't connect with it.
Cedar, I know that you were at least very seriously considering colleges. Are you still considering colleges? What are you thinking about in that area?
You know, Denny, looking at colleges now, you know, like I said, it's depressing. I don't think I'm going to go into college unless I really have to. If I can get away with like an online boot camp or internship, I got a friend who just signed on as an electrician's apprentice. I might try with him, right? There's so many amazing things besides college, and our country really needs infrastructure right now. We need to build back up. And I really think either my generation or the generation after us will really be the guys to try and put things back together. You know, after COVID, my dad always says that his generation was the one that messed things up. And it's really sad for me to hear that, you know, because he's my father and I don't want him to think that way of his own life, really. But, you know, he's still here and he helped me grow up. What he's looking at right now is perhaps the most pivotal point in his life now. Because like either my generation or the generation after us, I think we're going to be putting things back together. And sorry, I've gone a little bit off topic, Denny. Sorry about that. But I think this is important. the generations that, as my dad said, sort of messed it all up. You're still here, right? Or else you wouldn't be listening to this awesome radio show. Let me just say that. You can still fix things. You know, people my age and even older than me, we're trying to get back to something good. And we've tried going forward for years. I mean, Denny, you've seen this. It's not working. I think kids my age, I really believe we're trying to go back to something better. And that means the days that our grandparents and parents can remember. And that's really what we're trying to do, I think.
Well, that makes sense. Because if right now suddenly somebody gave you several million dollars and told you that you had to use the money to build a plant to start making medicine in the United States, so we wouldn't have to buy it from China, and you built the plant, where would you find anybody that knew how to do that? Where would the skills come from? Because we don't have those skills anymore. And if we're going to do that, and I sincerely hope we will, we're going to need people with those kind of skills, whether it's the medicine making kind of thing or carpenters or just with skills. And we're hurting there.
You're right, Denny. You know, it's back to the college thing. So I'll try and answer it now. In order to like really rebuild America, right now we need trades. And then to make America grow and be back on top of things, we're going to need those college degrees. You're right. But in my current situation, looking at the colleges right now, I would never go into a college unless I really had to make my life, you know, work. I'm trying to enter UI design, so like website design. And I'm trying to get away with boot camp and just getting certificates and things. But if I find I can't get a job with that, I'm going to push for a college, but I really want to stay away from it because there's so many things that have been ruined. Right now, we need to fix our kids. Like me, I'm just entering life. Kids my age, we're looking around, we're trying to figure out what to do. We don't know what the right thing to do is. I'm sorry, I'm going to keep nagging on parents here. Like, you need to tell your kids what the right thing to do is, or else we're not going to know. Because if it weren't for my parents like helping me figure out what to do next, I'd be totally lost, okay? And no one fully understands, I think, how important it is to be that parent. And just as I'm getting older, I'm starting to see it. I'm like, wow, Mom, you had to put up with a lot, but you did it well.
Well, and that's what good parents do. And the challenge is we, the older generation, need to understand what we've left your generation to inherit so that maybe we can work together to fix things. Yeah. That's, I think, a key point of our conversation today.
Yeah. I think that your generation, Denny, I'm not going to call you guys an older generation because I know you're all young at heart, but what you have to give us, I think, is all of your memories, everything that you know that's right. When I look at someone who's old, the first thing I think is, wow, that person has a whole ton of wrinkles. But you got to think about it, right? And you see that a person who's lived through even 40 years of life, all the way up to 120, they've seen so many things. They've seen nations fall. They've seen nations rise up in some cases, right? What the older generations have to give us, kids my age, is insanely valuable, even if we don't realize it. And I'm trying to see it, you know, and kids my age, what I really want us to do is sort of the screens, get off the phones and sort of connect with people, because you can't learn about what's happened before from a phone. It just doesn't work. You need to look into that person's eyes and really see them. Like right now we're talking over Zoom, but I've met you in person before. It's visceral. It's real. You need to put people in person, get off the phone, because if you want to actually go back to what's right and figure things out the right way, you need to learn what's gone wrong. And people like my father, right? He's seen things go wrong so many times. He's had things go wrong. He's done the wrong thing. But that way he can bring it to me as a kid and say, you know, like what I've done in the past, learn from my mistakes. And learn from what I write too, because my father's done a lot of things right. I mean, I talked to him all the time. He's a very good guy. And I know he's going to listen to this and probably blush, but love you, Dad.
You know,
what we really need is to learn from what's gone wrong and what's gone right and to choose the right thing.
Well said. Cedar, I really appreciate you. thank you for your comments. I think you have really given this some great thought and hit the nail on the head. Thank you for reporting for duty today. I'm grateful you're on our team.
Thank you, Denny. Thanks for everyone who's listening.
This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. Now it's time to do some deep knee bends. Go halfway down each time. Do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
As veterans, we at Concerned Veterans for America know defending freedom comes at a high cost. Our lawmakers should consider that cost when they send troops to war.
If wars don't serve our national interest, our brave men and women shouldn't be deployed into harm's way. Our troops should not be in combat because Congress doesn't want to make tough decisions about military engagement.
Find out how you can join the movement to end our nation's endless wars at CVAFrontlines.com. That's CVAFrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Denny Gilliam. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Steve Gorham. He's an executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America and author of four books on energy, climate change, sustainable development, public policy, over 100,000 copies in print. His latest book, A Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure, came out in August last year. Great guy, a good friend. Thanks for joining us today, Steve. Thank you.
Hey, Denny. Great to join you again.
Steve, you've given a lot of thought to the impact of AI on climate change. Talk about what that looks like to you.
Well, this is a fairly recent thing. First, artificial intelligence really became a huge factor last year. ChatGPT came out about a year and a half ago or so. And then all the major companies that were into data centers, Alphabet, Google, Meta, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, are all going hook, line, and sinker into this artificial intelligence. They need big data centers to do that. And this is going to have a tremendous impact on the proposed energy transition that is underway. And I don't think many people know how big this is going to be, but it has the potential of stopping the transition to wind and solar in our grid in its tracks. So if I could give a little bit of background on that first, and then we'll get into AI.
Yeah.
So currently in the United States, last year, we got 59% of our electricity from natural gas and coal, hydrocarbons. Natural gas is about 43% of our electricity, coal about 16%, nuclear 18%, and then wind and solar were small, about 14%. We've had flat electricity demand for about two decades now. It's been about 4.1 million gigawatt hours for two decades, hasn't changed very much. And during this time, we've had a lot of utilities closing coal plants. About 60% of our coal was closed, and they're building wind and solar and building more natural gas. Natural gas went up quite a bit to become the biggest energy source. But now, for the first time, we have a tremendous increase in demand that is coming, and it's going to make some major changes.
And this increase in demand is because of AI?
That's the biggest one, but let me hit the first three. The first three were green ones. One is a push for electric vehicles. We now have 17 states with zero emissions vehicle mandates, which means electric vehicles, basically. And the EPA has passed a rule just last month. They want something like 40 to 60% of all new car sales to be electrics by 2030. So that's going to provide a big demand for electric power. The second is electric appliances. Again, the green movement wants everybody to switch to heat pumps and retire their gas furnaces, propane furnaces, stoves, and water heaters. We even have a gas construction that is banned in a number of cities and counties. New York City is the biggest one. You can't build a new residential building with gas appliances there. So this is going to be another big demand increase. Matter of fact, the New England Independent System Operator, who controls electricity in New England, thinks that the shift to electric appliances is going to be bigger than the shift to electric vehicles for New England. The third one is another one people haven't heard about much, and that's a push for green hydrogen fuel. The federal government is funding efforts to produce hydrogen from electrolysis of water. Well, you run an electric current through water, you produce hydrogen fuel, and they want to use that in industry and maybe vehicles. But all of those three are a lot smaller than this AI revolution. And so what is going on now? As I said, we have the big firms like Meta and Alphabet that are building out data centers. And to do artificial intelligence, which is basically to get machines to think like computers and make decisions like computers, analyze, they go through these learning processes, and they require tens of thousands of processors, and they put them in data centers, and they run these things for weeks and months at a time, 24 hours a day, to do these learning cycles. And it just requires vast amounts of power. Virginia is supposed to have to double its electricity demand in the next 10 years. Chicago says because the data centers are going to take nine times as much power. Here's a quote from a guy in Georgia here. A guy by the name of Jason Shaw, who's chairman of the Georgia Public Service Commission, he said, quote, "When you look at the numbers, it is staggering. It makes you scratch your head and wonder how we ended up in this situation. How were the projections that far off?" He means the projections forecasting electricity demand. And he goes on to say, this has created a challenge like we've never seen before. So we have a little more than 2,500 data centers in the United States. And these are big buildings that are acres in size. They're air conditioned to keep the temperature low so these processors can run. And they are building more of these. And then they're also upgrading data centers. A company by the name of NVIDIA has become one of the largest in the world by selling high-speed AI processing cards for servers. Traditionally, servers have done our things like internet and other database functions. But now when you plug in new cards to get them to do AI, you require 6 to 10 times more electricity than you did with the previous servers. So today, electricity for artificial intelligence is about 4% of U.S. electricity demand. It's projected to go up to 20% of our electricity within the next 10 years. And so these utilities are struggling with how to support this AI revolution. It's really going to have a big, big impact.
That's a really good question. And I can see how that could sneak up on people, but there's nothing you can do but acknowledge that our consumption is going up and is going up. We don't know how far much further it's going to go, do we? It's going to
keep going. We don't really know. So here's what's going to happen with this. So the idea that we're going to, the green movement wants to shut down 59% of our current electricity. That's natural gas and coal. That isn't going to happen. There's no way we can grow the national demand and still shut down all these plants and replace them with wind and solar. So you're going to see that stopping. We've already seen this with a couple of nuclear plants in California, the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant, the last plant, nuclear plant, was scheduled to close in 2025. It's been extended to operate until 2030. In Michigan, the Palisades nuclear plant was closed in May of 2022, but now it's getting $1.5 billion from the federal government to restart. And we have coal plants throughout the Midwest. Just to give you an idea here, Indiana, 67% of its electricity from coal, Ohio, 42%. Wisconsin, 47%, Iowa, 37%, Missouri, 78%, Kentucky, 77% of electricity from coal. These things are not going to be shut down. They're going to have to keep them around to support all these data centers. So that's the first thing that's going to happen. And there's going to be a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth because the green movement wants to shut all these to eliminate carbon dioxide emissions.
Wow. We could be talking about this forever, but we're running out of time. Steve, you put some really good books out. People can follow up on. How can people get your books?
Yeah, so the latest is Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. And I actually wrote this before this AI thing popped up. But this is adding fuel to the fire, this AI electricity demand. But it's a great book. It's a color paperback. Not only do you get the facts and figures about electric power, home appliances, electric vehicles, heavy industry, heavy transportation, but there's a lot of fun color sidebars like the New York Times article where the guy was advocating that we all mate with short people to control global warming. So there's all kinds of true headlines. But anyway, they can get it from my website, Steve Goreham, GOREHAM.com. And it's available as well on Amazon. There are eBooks as well. But people need to find out what's going on with the renewable energy and pick up this book.
I totally agree. Thank you for joining us today, Steve. Thank you for the work that you're doing and getting the real truth out. I'm glad we're friends. God bless you, brother.
Thank you, Denny. We'll see you again.
Yes, sir. Coming up next on Front Lines of Freedom, General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. We will open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you are giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check universalcoin.com. That's where I go. universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gill on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice, then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Now it's time for the Battle of the Month. So, of course, joining us is General Chris Petty. Welcome back, brother. Glad you could join us again.
Thanks. Always love to be with you.
Well, you're part of the team, Chris. I mean, we started out just doing this, and now we're in this together.
We're really doing this.
Yeah, we're stuck with each other. That's a good thing. Give us a quick review of your time in Mother Army.
Okay, so West Point, like you, just a few years later, aviation officer, branched aviation, did all the normal stuff that a young aviator is supposed to do, company command and staff and all that. Fast forward to battalion command, I got to take a unit to Iraq during the surge. It performed really well and in a really adverse environment, so that led to some opportunities, which created brigade command, which was really a bunch of deployments back and forth with units to Afghanistan and Iraq. And then got to pin on a star, lo and behold, right as I'm out processing from the Army, they called me up and said, you want to be a general? It's hard to say no to that one. So I did. I said yes. And they sent me to Bosnia. I commanded the headquarters in Bosnia and then went to Pentagon for a while and learned how the Army operates and makes decisions and stuff like that. And then I finished out at NORTHCOM on the operations staff there at the combatant command. So wonderful time. Don't regret any of it. It was fantastic.
Hey, that's awesome. Okay. The Battle of the Month. We're leaving the United States this time, aren't we? We're going to the Battle of Waterloo. That's right. One of the most famous battles in history. I mean, probably more famous than any fought here in the United States.
Yeah, this is I like to sprinkle in some world history, and these are battles that people should be familiar with, really, because they're just so famous, number one. I mean, you ought to know Waterloo by itself just because it's so famous. So we're going to talk about Waterloo. This happened in, just to set everybody's frame of reference, this is the end of Napoleon's basic career, you know, rampaging through Europe for two decades. Waterloo ends it, and happens on 18 June 1815. This battle is Napoleon versus Duke of Wellington, which you've heard of, the famous English general of the army there, and von Blücher, which is the Prussian. You've probably heard of Blücher. And so this is the cast of characters. That's the date. Now, why should we know this battle? Well, Danny, you alluded to it, but this is one of history's greatest, most famous battles. But I think everyone should know this because it's even become a synonym for the final humiliating defeat of somebody that's going out and risking things, and they encounter their Waterloo. Well, there's a reason it's called Waterloo, and we'll talk about that. So that's why we should know it.
Amen, brother.
So here's the summary. Napoleon has conquered Europe, reshaped Europe for the past two decades. If you know the history at all, you know he's been in and around and fighting and expanding and contracting for two decades, spilling lots and lots of hundreds of thousands of lives worth of blood on the European continent. So finally, a year prior to Waterloo, he's defeated at Leipzig. He's banished by the coalition allies, which at this point is the Brits, the Russians, the Austrians, and the Prussians. He's banished to Elba, and they restore King Louis the 18th to the throne. Well, Napoleon wasn't finished. He escaped from his banishment, the little island. He lands in March of 1815. He moves to Paris with a small coterie of folks. The army swears loyalty to him, and he's off and running again. The Allies are still in Vienna, actually, coincidentally, arguing about how to carve up a post-Napoleon Europe. They quickly unite and move against him because Napoleon's back. The threat has emerged. Now, Napoleon now is faced with an immediate dilemma. He can stay in Paris, consolidate power, grow his army, and wait to be attacked because the Allies are coming. Or he can go on offense with a smaller force and strike a blow before the alliance can coalesce. So that's his plan. He decides to go on offense because it's Napoleon. It's what he does. He takes gambles. So he moves north from Paris towards Brussels and defeats the English. His plan is to move north, defeat the English, Wellington, before turning against the Prussians, which are coming from the east. So he thinks he's going to get interior lines and be able to handle one and then handle the other. Classic Napoleon move. So when Napoleon moves his army of about 105,000 troops north, he does surprise the Allies. They don't really understand how fast he's going to move, and they are separated. So he sends one of his commanders, Marshal Ney, north to hold off Wellington while he moves east to hit the Prussians. Marshal Ney fights Wellington's Dutch Corps at Quatre Bras, which is part of this battle setup, Quatre Bras. Napoleon turns against the Prussians at Ligny and really just kicks their butt. So the Prussians are defeated. They are retreating. All looks good for Napoleon. Now, here's where it gets interesting. After Napoleon beats the Prussians, he feels like he has the advantage. So the Prussians are retreating. He turns his army to focus on Wellington because Marshal Ney has Wellington supposedly pinned down. But Wellington disappeared in the middle of the night, and he repositions to Waterloo to block Napoleon's route to Brussels. So now the Prussians, instead of retreating east, which would be normal along your line of communication, they retreat north so they can still help Wellington. Now, Napoleon doesn't realize this. So he consolidates to attack Wellington at Waterloo, he doesn't realize the Prussians have regenerated their army and are going to be able to assist Wellington. So that's a big surprise. So on the 18th, when Napoleon attacks at Waterloo, another mistake he makes is he delays the start to let the ground dry because his advantage is in artillery and cavalry, and his cavalry can't move, you know, through muddy, grassy, you know, terrain. So that delay helps the Prussians gain time as they're moving through the mud to assist Wellington. Now, the battle itself is a great story of back and forth. Wellington's very effective as a tactical commander here, offsetting French advantages. And I can't get into all the details of that, but he uses reverse slopes. He uses his reserves correctly. He uses infantry squares versus cavalry, which are quite effective. So all those details are fantastic. But in the end, just as Napoleon is about to overcome the British, the Prussians arrive on his right to save the day. It's just too much. He can't hold off their numbers. You know, he's outnumbered like 2-1 at this point. So he retreats to Paris. His army's destroyed. And then he can't hold on to power. He's exiled to St. Helena, where he later dies. So Napoleon is finally finished. He is undone at Waterloo, which is why it remains the synonym for your final defeat, your final ignominious defeat. And that is the quick story of Waterloo.
It is indeed. And there's so much more information on it. Because as you pointed out, it was a battle, but it was the last in a series of battles.
Yes. And it's one of the interesting things about Waterloo is it's really the 3 days leading up to Waterloo and the fact that the Prussians were deceptive and really amazing to regenerate an army that just got your total butts kicked and be able to come to the aid of Wellington. I mean, that was really, it's a remarkable story, just how Gebhard von Blücher and his staff pulled that off, that by itself. And then Wellington on the battlefield, really well done. There's a lot of leadership lessons and everything. So it's a really nice story. Waterloo's a really good story.
It sure is. And we could go on and on and on, but we don't have time. This is Colonel Denny Gillam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Chris Petty. Chris, tell us about Battle Digest so those of us that are interested can stay up on other battles too. It's a great option.
Yeah, thanks, Denny. It's a very simple, beautiful publication. It's a trifold brochure that I produce on these famous historical battles with the maps and the images. And so you really, in about a 30-minute read, you have a full understanding of what happened on the battlefield and why it happened on the battlefield and what lessons we can learn. So I hope your listeners would look at my website. Just take a look, battledigest.com. One word, battledigest.com. And just take a look because it's really good stuff. People love it. It's a great gift. I package some of them in a book called 12 Battles Every American Should Know, and that's on the website. So I hope your listeners will take a peek at that thing.
I certainly recommend it. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for this great review of this really important battle in history. And thanks for being a member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. I'm proud that we can work together.
Thanks, Denny. Always a pleasure.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillam. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want you to range your ready. Then stand at ease. Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. I'm Colonel Denny Gillam. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a really great place to go to purchase silver and gold. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, Army vet Clyde wrote that he heard you went to your West Point 60th reunion recently. What was it like?
Clyde, my son, and I did go to my 60th reunion and had a ball. I did note that some of the guys there had gotten old, others not so much. I enjoyed watching the parade as opposed to being in it.
And Air Force Dad Peter is very concerned that we may find ourselves in a war with Iran soon. Can that happen?
Peter, it sure can. I think that Israel may take out Iran with no more help from us than what we're providing now. But Iran has to be hit before they develop their own nukes. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 23 May 1777, during the Revolutionary War at Sag Harbor, New York, Patriot troops under Lieutenant Colonel Meigs captured several British vessels and burned Redcoat supplies. With the help of two local men, Meigs and his Connecticut Raiders grabbed the British commander from his bed early in the morning. Instead of guns, the Patriots used bayonets to capture the British fort. The British had built their fort on a cemetery because it was the highest land in the area with the best view of the harbor. They desecrated colonist family gravesites, thus lost the battle for the hearts and minds of the residents. With six Redcoats dead and 53 captive, the Patriots moved from the fort towards the harbor. the British ships anchored there eventually noticed the men moving towards them and opened fire. The Patriots, though, went on to burn 24 British ships and their cargoes of hay, rum, grain, and other items. With an additional 37 prisoners in custody, 170 Yankee raiders returned to Connecticut without having lost a single man. This ambush was the only successful Patriot attack on Long Island between the British takeover in 1776 and their departure at the war's end in 1783. That sounds like a really good day's work there, Colonel.
It sure did. They did a good job. And on the 20th of May, 1801, four warships were sent to the Mediterranean to protect American commerce from Barbary pirates. Apparently that didn't work because exactly 14 years later, on the 20th of May, 1815, Commodore Stephen Decatur on the frigate Guerriere sailed with 10 ships to suppress Mediterranean pirates' raids on our shipping. I guess those pirates didn't stop.
And on 23 May, 1900, Sergeant William Harvey Kearney was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor for his bravery on July 18, 1863, while fighting for the Union cause as a member of the 54th Massachusetts Colored Infantry. He was the first African-American to receive the Medal of Honor. In July 1863, the regiment saw its first action at James Island, South Carolina, performing admirably against experienced Confederate troops. 3 days later, the 54th volunteered to lead the assault on Fort Wagner, highly fortified outpost on Morris Island that was part of the Confederate defense of Charleston Harbor. Struggling against a lethal barrage of cannon and rifle fire, they fought their way to the top of the fort's parapet over several hours. Sergeant Kearney was wounded there while planting the U.S. flag. The regiment's white commander, Colonel Robert Shaw, was killed, and his soldiers were overwhelmed by the fort's defenders and had to fall back. Despite his wound, Kearney wouldn't retreat until he removed the flag, and though successful, he was shot again in the process. The 54th lost 281 of its 600 men in its brave attempt to take Fort Wagner, which throughout the war never fell by force of arms. Kearney eventually recovered and was discharged with disability on June 30, 1864.
Well, that was like 30 years after he earned the medal that he got it. But he got it. That's what's important. On the 21st of May, 1942, during World War II, 4,300 Jews were deported from the Polish town of Chelm to the Nazi extermination camp at Sobibor, where they were all gassed to death. On the same day, the German firm IG Farben set up a factory just outside of Auschwitz in order to take advantage of the Jewish slave laborers from Auschwitz concentration camps. A camp revolt occurred in October 1943. 300 Jewish slave laborers rose up and killed several members of the SS as well as Ukrainian guards. The rebels were killed in battle, and the remaining prisoners were executed the very next day.
And on 20 May 1951, Air Force Captain James Jabara, 4th Fighter Interceptor Wing, became the first Korean War ace and the first jet ace in aviation history after downing his 5th MiG. He accomplished this feat in an F-86 Sabre with one hung drop tank. Wow.
That's impressive. And on the 20th of May, 1969, during the Vietnam War, after 10 days and 10 bloody assaults, Hill 937 in the South Vietnam was finally captured by U.S. and South Vietnamese troops. The Americans who fought there critically dubbed the hill Hamburger Hill because the battle and its high casualty rate reminded them of a meat grinder. Located 1 mile east of the Laotian border, Hill 937 was ordered taken as part of a mission intended to limit enemy infiltration from Laos that threatened Wei to the northeast and Da Nang to the southeast. On May 10th, following air and artillery strikes, U.S.-led infantry forces launched its first assault on the North Vietnamese stronghold, but suffered many casualties and fell back. 10 more assaults came during the next 10 days, but the North Vietnamese didn't abandon the hill until May 20th. Almost 100 Americans were killed and over 400 wounded in taking the hill, a shocking 70% casualty rate. This battle contributed to a growing public outcry over our military policy in Vietnam. Our military leaders had ordered Hill 937 taken primarily as a diversionary tactic, and on May 28th, it was abandoned. This led to further outrage in America over what was seen as a senseless loss of American lives. And that's American history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat, but if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a robber broke through a glass door with a huge rock and tried to rob jewels from Cendrone Jewelers. Once inside, he smashed a glass case, but was then met by the store's owner, Air Force veteran Jared Petticord, who entered and aimed his handgun at him. The robber immediately threw up his hands and ran out of the store. Petticord didn't pursue the robber, but instead called 911 to get police on the scene. The Air Force vet says he carries a pistol all the time and considers it a necessary self-defense tool. Police say the suspect has not yet been identified or arrested.
Thanks, Colonel. This Air Force vet did a fantastic job at protecting himself and his business. He did everything right and was rewarded with success and no injuries. Let's break it down from a military point of view. First, his response was immediate and decisive. He heard the breaking glass and immediately drew his gun and went into action. His response wasn't timid, but instead was very bold. Second, he used the element of surprise. The robber thought the store was empty, so he was no doubt shocked when he ended up staring down at the working end of a pistol. Many military victories are achieved using the element of surprise. Using the element of surprise, the attacking force can overcome superior numbers and greater firepower. Third, he issued a challenge command in a loud and assertive voice. This startled the criminal, and along with the sight of the gun, caused him to flee. Before you issue your challenge command, always get behind cover in case the criminal is armed as well. And finally, our Air Force vet hero didn't foolishly chase after the criminal into the street. He stayed at the scene and called for police backup. He also was wise not to fire his gun at the intruder. In most jurisdictions, shooting at a fleeing felon will land you in prison. Here's one thing I've noticed from teaching my concealed carry classes. Military veterans are less resistant to using deadly force against criminals than the average citizen. That makes sense because we've already had to think it through while in the military and have been trained in the use of deadly force. This Air Force vet did a fantastic job protecting his property. He kept a cool head and did everything right. Frontlines of Freedom salutes Garrett Petticord for his bravery and his take charge attitude.
Well said, Skip. Our movie of the month is The Life of Death. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog, get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments about the movie. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom is Memorial Day weekend. General Arnold Panera will discuss our nation's major challenges. Then the CEO of Iraq and Afghan Veterans of America, Allison Jaslow, will join us. And Diane Raver will review the movie of the month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.